Welcome to StudyClicks Explains, where we provide audio notes and analysis on junior cycle and leaving cert topics to get you those top marks. We make exams easier.
Hi everyone, my name is Peter Tobin and thank you for tuning into this StudyClicks podcast. I'm an English teacher. And I've also got a channel on YouTube with lots of free videos on different parts of the Leaving Cert English course, as well as some downloadable worksheets and notes grids and things like that. In this podcast, I'm going to give you my take on the comparative, how to approach it, and give you some tips on how to get a better grade. Historically, the comparative is one of the worst answered questions on the entire English paper, alongside unseen poetry. But it's worth 70 marks, the same amount of marks for the entire poetry section. That's a lot of marks that students are missing out on. There's a number of reasons why students find the comparative so difficult, but first we'll go through what the comparative actually involves, and then we'll take a look at what the most recent examiner's report for English says about it. In the comparative, you have to base your answer on three texts. And by texts here, they mean novels, plays, and films, so the choice is really quite broad. It's worth 70 marks, and it should take you just under an hour or so to answer. It's usually either broken into two parts, a part A and B, where in part A you focus on one text and in part B you focus on the other two texts together, or it's one single question worth all 70 marks looking at all three texts together. Now there are also four modes of comparison, and these are literary genre, theme or issue, cultural context, and general viewpoint or vision. Now usually there are three of these modes prescribed for any one year that the Leaving Cert is on. And although it sounds a little bit tricky, all that it really means is that there are three different focuses for comparing these texts through literary genre, themes and issues, general viewpoint and vision, or cultural context. We'll look at all of these modes individually, but first let's look at why students tend to struggle with this question. So there are generally three reasons why students don't do as well in the comparative as they do in other parts of the paper. And these are a lack of engagement with the question, relying on formulaic approaches in their answer, and a lack of critical literacy. Let's get through the first two quickly because they're actually relatively quite simple to fix, while I think the third, critical literacy, is the key to the comparative. So in a way, the first two are actually linked. Students who don't stick to the question often don't stick to it because they're actually answering a different question that they had pre-prepared instead. The examiner's report clearly states, and I quote, "Formulaic approaches to answering questions in this section can hinder candidates by inhibiting their engagement with the terms of the questions and curtailing the expression of independent opinion. This in turn impacts on their ability to score highly in the exam." End quote. So learning off an answer basically, or sticking to too fixed an outline, can actually lose you marks. And this is because students who do this often aren't flexible enough in their thinking to answer the question that is on the paper. They're really answering the question that they wanted to come up instead. And I completely understand why a student would learn off a response or stick to a rigid structure. It gives you comfort in an exam like English, where there's so much to do in such little time. However, if you want to get the top marks, you need to change your approach a little. Unfortunately, there really are no shortcuts here. Students can be incredibly successful in the comparative only if they put in the work in advance. And the key to the comparative is located in the two words that we heard a moment ago, critical literacy. Critical literacy is seen as the crucial skill that the Leaving Cert syllabus tries to instill in students. But what does it mean? Well, literacy or being literate means being able to read and write. But we can also use the term to refer to other types of knowledge. We hear so often nowadays about how important it is to be digitally literate. And you might hear of your local libraries running digital literacy courses for seniors in the community, for example. So critical here doesn't simply mean to criticise either. To be critical means to analyse the merits and faults of something, a film or a book or a play or even a video game. So critical literacy means to give students the knowledge and the ability to evaluate something based on its strengths and weaknesses. And when we apply it to Leaving Cert English, what it means is that, and this is a direct quote from the English Leaving Cert syllabus, to adopt a variety of critical stances, to question the authority of texts, and to compare and contrast texts. End quote. So in three words, to question, to compare, and to contrast. So essentially you're being asked to read or watch three texts, interrogate them, question their authority, their message, the accepted ideas behind them, and then to compare and contrast those ideas across the three texts. When we come back to the examiner's report, we can see that there's an interesting point to be made at the end. It says, teachers should take the opportunity to develop students' skills in critical literacy, and students should be encouraged to assess the validity of assertions in texts, to challenge the ideas presented and form independent views. So how do we do all of that? Well, as I said before, there are no shortcuts. The key to be able to critically assess a text is to be really familiar with it. You need to have read or watched that text to the point that you know it inside out, or at the very least, you know the key scenes inside out. Then you can look at creating original ideas and viewpoints. A very helpful question to ask yourself when you're preparing for the comparative is, what if? So for example, what if Lady Macbeth isn't in fact evil and is actually the victim in the play Macbeth? What if Frankenstein is not the monster but Victor is? What if Desdemona is actually to blame for what happens to her in Othello? What if the handmaids in The Handmaid's Tale are to blame for accepting their own fate? Examiners are not machines. They want to read interesting, original ideas, and one way to begin developing them is to start questioning the accepted or common interpretations of a text. If you're going to know your text well, you're going to need to keep good notes. If you need a sample notes grid to start with, you can go to my channel on YouTube, Mr. Tobin Leaving Cert English, and in the description from some of the videos on the comparative, there's a link to a free notes grid that you can download for yourself. It's important to be able to identify your key scenes and have notes for each text, and then you can start thinking and asking yourself, what if? So although the comparative is a challenge, with some work and some thinking, you can do well in it. Remember to avoid pre-prepared answers and stick to the question, but most importantly, know your text well enough so that you can really develop some interesting interpretations and original ideas. Now, let's focus on some of the individual modes that you could be asked questions on. So the first mode that we're going to look at is cultural context. Culture here means the ideas, customs, and social behaviour of a particular group of people or society, while context means the specific circumstances that form the setting for an event or idea and that allow it to be better understood. Take reading, for example. Nowadays, so in the context of today, reading is seen as a good thing. We want people to be literate so that they can read books and learn things. Our culture, in the context of today, actively encourages reading and teaching everyone how to read, but that's not always been the case. In many cultures and in many different contexts, reading has been, and in some places still is, seen as dangerous in the wrong hands. There have been books that have been banned, burned, or even whole groups of people, often lower classes, women and minorities, who've been refused education in case they should learn to read for themselves and challenge their masters. So, the simple act of reading can be incredibly subversive or dangerous, depending on the cultural context. Let's take an example from a text that's on the prescribed list for the comparative, and one that's becoming very popular, The Handmaid's Tale, as it's a text that many students are studying for the comparative, and we're going to look at a recent cultural context question. In part A of that question, you're asked to identify at least one type of behaviour that is considered unacceptable in the world of the novel. Well, if we take The Handmaid's Tale, we would choose the act of reading. In The Handmaid's Tale, the world of the novel is one where women are the property of men, they have no rights, and they're not even allowed to read. That seems like a really simple and straightforward answer. Choose an activity that is unacceptable. Well, reading is unacceptable. Despite how simple the response seems, the rest of the question allows you to go much more in depth. The question goes on to ask why the behaviour is unacceptable and what society's response to it is. This allows you to discuss the patriarchal system at work in the New Republic, Gilead, and society's view of women. The fact that they're not allowed to read indicates both an intolerance for women as anything more than childbearers, but it also shows a fear or a mistrust of women, that if they were allowed to read, that it might spread dangerous ideas. So the cultural context mode is asking you to look at the characters in the text and the world of the text and see how they both shape and are shaped by the factors of their culture and context. Some of these factors include religion, gender, attitudes towards sex and marriage, social status or class, wealth, poverty, politics, authority, and systems of government and control. Let's take a look at some of the other recent cultural context questions that have come up. The question 2 from 2018, for example, asks you to compare the aspect of cultural context in each of the texts you have studied that most impacts on the happiness or success of a central character. Here, I would be looking to identify characters who face difficulties because of society's rules or social conventions. Think the strict social code of appropriate marriages in the world of Jane Austen's Persuasion, or think of the expectations placed upon Eilish in Brooklyn by her mother and the conventions of traditional Irish society, or even the lack of emotion in any sort of real relationship between Gar and his father SB in Philadelphia Here I Come. The question one from 2016 looks at the idea of power and who holds it, and this question will be a great opportunity to look at social status, class, wealth and poverty, and authority in your texts. Some of the other previous questions are variations on the same idea. Social class, how the cultural context impacts upon a character, and how they overcome them or succumb to them, and power. At this point, I want to remind you of the key to comparative that was mentioned earlier, critical literacy. You're being encouraged to develop your own interpretations and ideas of the text you are studying. Remember that simple question, what if? And apply it to aspects of cultural context that you are focusing on or the character that you are discussing. So the next mode that we're going to go through is general vision and viewpoint. And this mode asks you about the outlook that the text offers and how we as readers or viewers respond and engage with that outlook. The "and" there is really important. There are two points, what the writer is doing, but also how you are responding to what they have done. So I'm going to explain this mode through two examples. Think for a second of the Harry Potter books and why they've been so popular. The author has created a world where a boy who, to all intents and purposes, is an orphan living in an abusive home. He realizes that he is in fact special, unique, and through that uniqueness, he finds a stand-in family that love him and offer him support and guidance and help him achieve incredible things. The vision and viewpoint of these books is in fact incredibly positive and optimistic. Even though there are moments of peril or danger, the central character, Harry, always wins out. The reader response to this vision or viewpoint on life has been phenomenal. Millions of people have read the Harry Potter books. There is something in the author's vision of the world that readers love or have a very strong response to. If the author had written about a boy with no parents who grew up in an abusive home and he wasn't a wizard or didn't have any special powers and instead, unfortunately, went down the path that many children who suffer trauma in their early years do, I'm not sure the books would have had the same response from readers and the same level of success. So what is it then? Well, the author offers us a view of the world, in the case of Harry Potter, a very optimistic and fantastical one. Readers have responded to it positively, perhaps because our world isn't really like that, and the books offer them some escapism, or perhaps because readers love to see the underdog succeed. A boy who has almost nothing going for him realises he's the saviour of the world. There are other texts that offer very different visions and viewpoints, but that is only half of the equation. You must always consider the reader's response, your response. So regardless of how the question is worded, these are the two keys to general viewpoint and vision. What the writer is doing and how you as the reader respond to it. In simple terms then, the general viewpoint and vision of a text is the sort of outlook on life that it offers. You could ask yourself the following questions to help identify the general viewpoint and vision of a text. Is the text positive or negative? What sort of view does it offer on society, people, or systems? Does it change or develop through the text? How does it end? Is there a resolution or a change in the viewpoint? What is the reader left with? As with all aspects of the comparative, creating and keeping notes is really important. You should track or monitor the development of the viewpoint throughout each of the three texts you are studying to get an overall view of them. Then you can identify three or four key moments that you could talk about where the viewpoint or vision is made clear. Always examine the beginning and ends of texts, as this is where an author, playwright or director will be working hard to establish that outlook and bring the vision to a conclusion at the end. If you are focusing just on key scenes, then the opening and closing scenes of a drama or a film should be part of your selection. Let's take a look at another example. Many of you will have studied the novel 1984, either for your comparative or earlier in your school career. If you haven't, the novel is about a character called Winston who lives in a dystopian world. People are under constant surveillance by Big Brother and the party, the people in charge of the country. Winston does not like the party, although he works for them. He begins a relationship with a woman called Julia, even though it's not allowed, and together they begin to meet other people who they think also want to overthrow the party. They are betrayed and Winston is captured. He is tortured until he is broken and he gives in to the party. If we look at the general viewpoint and vision in this novel, then we see that it is very pessimistic. Everything in the novel contributes to this viewpoint. The streets are dirty, apartments and workplaces are noisy and smell bad, and even the food is described as grey. The characters are miserable, and even at the beginning, Winston begins by saying that he expects to be killed. There are, however, moments in the text when the viewpoints shift and we see some optimism and positivity. These moments centre around the character's hopes that a different way of life is possible, that a rebellion might be coming. The viewpoint of the text changes and shifts. If you haven't got to the end of the text, I'm giving a spoiler alert here, the end is miserable. Winston gives in to the torture, gives up on love or a vision of a different future. It reinforces the pessimism that we find throughout the text. While in Harry Potter there are moments where the viewpoint on life is pessimistic and negative, Harry living in an abusive home, for example, overall it is positive because he escapes that life and becomes something greater. In 1984, Winston doesn't succeed against the odds. In fact, the system brutally puts him in his place and he accepts it at the end as it has broken him, so the overall vision and viewpoint of that text is really dark and pessimistic. Readers will respond to these texts in different ways, depending on their experiences of life. Some readers of Harry Potter find the books too simplistic and fanciful. There's no real depth to them. We all know what's going to happen. Others, however, find them deeply satisfying. Similarly, some readers find 1984 too dark and depressing. It paints a picture of the dangers of totalitarianism, and there are many uncomfortable parallels with our own lives. However, others think it's enlightening, and although grim, a must-read novel that warns us about the dangers of power. So general viewpoint and vision is the vision of the world offered to us by a text, and how we as readers respond to it. As with all the other modes, ask yourself, what if? And aim for interesting personal interpretations. The next mode we're going to go through is literary genre. Now, this mode is all about how the story is told. It's about the nuts and bolts of presenting a story to a reader or a viewer and how best to achieve that. So let's look first at a couple of questions on this mode. A recent exam paper has a question that asks you to discuss how effective two techniques are at giving insight to the mind of a central character, while the other question on that paper asks how techniques are used to establish mood or atmosphere. So here, what you're really being asked to do is to identify how an author, playwright or director presents their story to us in a way that, for the first question, gives us an insight into the mind of a reader, and for the second question, that creates mood or atmosphere. So you need to be switched on here to what the author, playwright or director is doing to be able to answer this question effectively. Well, let's look at some of the things that they can do. And there's a list that we can work through. So these things, in no particular order, involve characterization, narration, music, lighting, props and framing, imagery and symbolism, plot and structure. Let's start with characterization, and we'll go through some of the questions that you should be asking of the text. So for characterization, you can ask, how are the main characters developed? How do we learn about them? Is it through their own actions or things other characters say about them? Are any of these characters being used as foils? And a foil is a character who is used to highlight a quality or trait in a main character. When it comes to narration, we can ask, who is telling the story? Are they trustworthy? Is it a first-person narrator? Is it a third-person narrator? Are they omniscient? Or do they learn what's happening at the same time as the reader? What has this particular type of narration been used for? Are there flashbacks, flash-forwards, or breaks in narrative structure? If there are, why are they used and what impact do they have? Looking at music, lighting, props and framing, and remember these are obviously for the film and play texts, dramas. And also remember, the play texts on your comparative study are written to be performed, not just read. So be aware of how the play is supposed to look on the stage. And if at all possible, try and go and see it. For this section, we can ask, how is music used? How is lighting used? Is there specific lighting for specific characters or scenes or moods in the play? How does a director frame their shots in a film? Are there any recurring motifs or ideas in the play or film? How do they begin and end? When it comes to imagery and symbolism, we ask, are there any recurring images or symbols in the text that stand for something bigger or deeper? How are they used to good effect by the author, playwright or director? And finally, looking at plot and structure, we can ask, how does the text move from beginning to end? Are there any shifts in time, place, narrator or mood along the way? What is the purpose of these shifts? How is suspense created and maintained? What happens immediately before and immediately after the key moments in the text? Now, these are just some of the techniques that can be found in your text, so as you can see, there's a lot there to write about. The key to literary genre, however, and this is really important, is not just to identify that a technique has been used, you must identify it and then discuss its impact on the characters and your experience of the text based on the question asked. So, for example, in question one from the 2018 paper, you're asked how the techniques used by an author influence how we respond to the characters. In a question like this, it's not enough to just say, for example, using Macbeth. Shakespeare uses the opinions of others to tell the audience about Macbeth before we ever meet him. All you're doing there is identifying the technique. Instead, you need to say how that technique has influenced your opinion. So a better response would be one like this. Shakespeare uses an interesting technique whereby the audience learns about the character of Macbeth through the golden opinions of others, thereby creating a false impression of him as brave and noble. I felt that it made Macbeth's subsequent downfall even more shocking, as this technique has raised him up on a pedestal from the beginning. So summing up this mode, literary genre is all about how stories are told, whether in a novel, on the stage, or on the screen. There are some specific techniques that can be used, and it's really important that you're aware of them if you plan on answering a question on this mode. So the final mode for the comparative is theme or issue. This question is relatively straightforward, and there is a bit of a crossover here between this mode and some of the others. You're being asked here to identify a theme or an issue and then compare it across the three texts that you've chosen. A theme is a central topic of a text, something that is explored throughout the text. Some common themes that we encounter in literature are things like love, good versus evil, courage, death, race, class, coming of age, redemption, revenge. When we talked about literary genre, for example, we said that it's important not to simply identify techniques. And here, in theme and issue, it's also really important not just to identify a theme and say, here it is, look, I found it. Instead, you need to consider a few other things, and most importantly, give your own personal impression and viewpoint. There are a few aspects you need to consider when answering a question on this mode. Firstly, how is the theme introduced? Is the theme shown or explored through a specific character? Is it explicit, open and on the surface, or is it implicit, hidden away? Is it something that develops as the text progresses, or is it immediately obvious right from the beginning? Secondly, how is it presented to the reader? Is it being shown in a particular way? Is it being shown as primarily good or bad, positive or negative? What sort of an impact is it having in the world of the text? How is it explored through other characters? And finally, how is it resolved? Does the author, playwright, or director offer a resolution to the theme or issue being explored? Is it satisfactory or unsatisfactory, the outcome? How does it impact on the characters in the text? It's also important in this mode to relate your analysis of the theme or issue to yourself, to develop your own personal interpretation. Some questions that can be useful in forming your own opinions and ideas are, is this theme or issue still an issue in the world that I live in? Why or why not? What is my personal response or feeling towards this issue? Has it changed after seeing it explored in this text? So let's take a look at a recent question that asks you to discuss to what extent you were shocked or surprised at a theme you encountered in one of your texts, and then compare that theme in the two other texts. This is a really broad and open question, and this is often why students think that this is the easiest mode. But the question gives you so much leeway here that you really have to be careful not to drift away from the topic or the central concern of the question. One of the factors in answering this question well is to have identified the key moments in your text where certain themes or issues are highlighted. As this question is so open, you have to be really specific to avoid waffling. If we look at some of the other questions in recent years, we see that a common thread is your own opinion or impression of the theme. Remember, you're the reader or viewer or audience member. So when you're asked how it impacts the reader, you're really being asked about your own response to the text. Some of the words that keep cropping up in questions in this mode are personal reflections, the reader, readers, life today. Is it entertaining for the reader? Because this question is so broad, it's difficult to give specific guidance for each text, but what you can do is keep detailed notes on key scenes where the theme can be seen in each text and be prepared to give a personal response to it. A useful way to do that is to try to identify themes that are permanent and still issues today, like parent-child relationships that are explored in both Lady Bird and Philadelphia Here I Come, for example. I hope that you found this podcast useful to your study of the comparative. For more information on the comparative or other aspects of the Leaving Cert English course, please check out my channel on YouTube, Mr. Tobin Leaving Cert English. Thank you for listening and good luck.
A big thank you to Peter for providing such a clear and comprehensive breakdown of the comparative. This podcast was produced by StudyClicks. If you don't have an account already, we'd really recommend that you set up one today for free and get access to brilliant resources like notes, sample answers, questions by topic, quizzes, and so much more. If you'd like to get in touch, you can message us on any of our social media platforms through the chat box on StudyClicks, or you can drop us a quick email at info@studyclicks.ie. For more brilliant Leaving Cert English content that's completely free, you can go to Peter's YouTube channel, which is linked in this episode's description. And finally, if you've enjoyed this podcast or you found it helpful, we'd really love it if you left us a 5-star review wherever you're listening to us, so more people can find the podcast too. Thanks for listening, and we hope you stay tuned for more.